This is the Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 15, man's fourth visit to the lunar surface. Following their visit by lunar rover to Hadley Rill on their first EVA yesterday, astronauts Scott and Irwin are preparing to leave Falcon, the lunar module, for their second EVA excursion, a trip by lunar rover to the foot of the Apennine Mountains. Today's activity outside Falcon will be 30 minutes shorter than planned because the astronauts used oxygen during yesterday's excursion at a more rapid rate than expected. For a running account of this second EVA excursion, we take you now to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner.
Here in Houston, we're listening to the conversations coming from Hadley Base. Dave Scott and Jim Irwin are running just a little over an hour late in getting the portable life support systems donned and checked out. There was a problem a little earlier. There was an air bubble in a biomedical harness of some sort. And right now, let's listen. They're discussing another small problem.
Okay, he's off,
Joe. And the antenna.
Okay, Dave, and we're standing by for
Dave
progress.
Portable life support system. There's a nick out of it, or it's
okay, Joe,
possibly
broken in the work. Okay, Joe, I think we're
going
to take the top inch off of the antenna and use it as a splice.
That's the old splint trick, you mean?
Without this antenna,
yeah,
we
better try it, because unfortunately the antenna's broken right off at the root.
Oh, boy. His antenna is broken off right at the root, as he says there, where it goes into the top of the backpack. With us this morning is astronaut Fred Hayes, lunar module pilot on Apollo 13 and backup commander Apollo 16. And we're all listening very carefully to see what they do.
Yes, this antenna is a little flexible whip antenna that's about a foot long. It normally folds down flat on top of the backpack, and just before you go out to the patch, it's normally put up to a vertical position. So it's flexible. It's it can bend, and apparently when Jim Irwin was crawling in and out of the limb hatch, back into the limb, which he did several times yesterday, he could have impinged it on the hatch, the upper portion of the doorway, and put undue stress on it, which might have resulted in what's happened.
It is Jim's. It is Jim.
Yes, it's Jim. Jim Irwin.
Is a small metal-to-metal connection between the broken piece and the root of the antenna coming out. Dave, you may want to tape the antenna over across the top of the pliss if you think that'll be mechanically more secure than taping it straight up. We'll rely on you to decide on that one.
Their frequencies in the backpack are VHF, aren't they?
Okay, Joe, let's let Jim come back up on comm and lay the antenna across here, and let's see how it works.
Okay. Dave, while you have the tape out there, from the sound of things, maybe you'd better put some of it in your pocket for later.
Dave Scott
okay,
is...
Okay, now stand by a minute, Joe.
Roger.
We're hearing from Scott because he's doing the operation on Jim Irwin's backpack. Jim has the pack on now.
Joe.
They've gone through part of the checkout procedures.
Okay, Jim, I got one word there. Don't forget your mode switch.
Very meticulous process of checking out all of the systems on the backpack before they depressurize, before they add the helmets and gloves and depressurize the inside of the limb. This one's serious, obviously. The communications must be maintained from Jim Irwin.
Yeah, Houston was suggesting maybe they tape the antenna down in its flat or stowed position. The antenna is more directional in that position, but it might suffice for certainly communication between Jim and Dave. Certain times if Jim then was bending over or facing in a direction away from Earth, though, he may have trouble getting back.
Let's see, isn't
or in this case, the direction relative to the limb or to the rover, to the
relay.
Relay, yes.
Mm-hmm. The astronauts went through a very interesting debriefing last night. They were congratulated for their excellent work on the first extravehicular excursion. And I hope they got a good night's sleep. They were about an hour late getting into that last night. They're up and on. They got up on time this morning, a couple hours ago, maybe longer than that.
It's been our experience that no matter how well you plan things, in real life, it takes longer than you thought for a number of reasons. One is when you're doing it for real versus in training for practice, you're a little more careful in the case of working with the backpacks and the suits for consideration of working in a vacuum. And as we discussed yesterday, like when the backpack hung up on the floorboards, your training equipment is well worn and everything works very easily. The pins and the fittings are all worn because they've been used.
It looks like the best we're probably going to do here is to be able to tape it up so we have the contact and then leave the Pliss antenna down rather than erecting it. I'm afraid if we erect it, there's not much room to put tape in there and it may fall off and then we'd be out of business.
Roger, Dave, we agree with that. And Dave and Jim, you should be advised that there's a very good reason to believe that when you get out on the surface near the LCRU, Jim, you'll be able to transmit as well as receive, over, even without the antenna. Over.
Hopefully enough power in the transmitter receiver.
Okay, that sounds good.
In the backpack. That's Dave Scott saying, okay, that sounds good. We haven't heard from Jim, so we don't know how... Well, let's see. Are they on a hard connect with the LIMCOM at this moment, once they get the backpack?
Since I just walked in, I'm not sure what COM configuration they're in, and there are some modes where you're checking out the A and the B separate from the A-B mode that
they
end up in, and could be Jim is receiving but could not transmit now even if he wanted to.
Last I heard from them, Fred, was they verified this power down or... They were just about to the verification of the PLIS, the light, portable life support systems, COM, and telemetry. They hadn't quite gotten to that. I guess that's where they bumped into the antenna situation. Hmm. This the VHF frequency range, the very high frequency range of the backpack, needs to transmit only to either the lunar module for relay to the Earth or to the communications unit on the rover. For relay to Earth. So there will never be more than, probably 30, 40, 50 meters away from the rover during this excursion. We presume they're going to be able to drive the rover right to their sampling positions.
Well, when you say sampling positions, they're really not spots on the ground, but in some cases, like sampling leading up to a crater rim, so it involves several samples, maybe spaced at 10 feet apart leading up to the crater rim, so you get a feel for the vertical excavating.
Okay, go through it again.
That the crater has done.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're connected in go to A. Hi. Oh, too loud. Yeah. Can you hear loud and clear? Houston, how do you read the LMP?
LMP, you're loud and clear.
There was Jim Irwing.
Okay, very good. Okay, you're still too loud. You got squealed.
Too loud?
Turned down a little bit. Hold that. That's
it's
better.
Too
okay,
loud.
CB11 COM, CDR already open and connected to push time. Work.
Now Dave's looking at his checklist again.
Yes, Dave is fixing to disconnect from the LIM COM and go to the push COM.
Then that will check out his transmissions through the small antenna on his backpack.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he said yesterday afternoon during the first EVA that he had done something to his antenna. Maybe he was talking about Jim's when they first cracked it. They chipped it.
Yes, when they first got out, he was saying, asking Jim if he had gotten his antenna up. See, Jim was the one that normally would unstow his little whip antenna and as he went out the hatch.
That whistle is probably coming from Jim's. He's having some, he's in the process
okay,
of
I'm
getting...
Okay, I'm at B, I have a press flag and a O2 momentary, pressure gauge, and... And how do you read, Jim? I read you loud and clear. Okay,
Scott.
You give a check with Houston. Houston, how do you read?
Dave and Jim, we read you both loud and clear.
You know, Jim inflated in this very stiff suit.
Roger, go on to the next step.
For you to B and me to A.
Now they're checking out their other alternate comm mode.
Mm-hmm. Between the two?
Yes, and then they'll end up in AR.
Okay, how do you read, Jim? Loud and clear. Okay, you're loud and clear to me. And Houston, how do you read the CDR?
So Roger, you're both 5x.
5x5 means loud and clear, 5x.
In that mode, only Dave can talk to Houston.
AR. Okay, AR. You're loud and clear to me. How many to you? Same. Okay, Houston, how do you read the LMP and the CDR, and how is your TM?
Telemetry. TM, telemetry. How do you read CDR, command pilot,
okay,
LMP,
Dave,
lunar
we're
microphone?
Loud and clear on both, and we're go for the next step.
Okay, loud and clear to go to the next step.
My PSO2 quantity is 90%. How about yours, Jim? Rating 9-2. Okay, CB16ECS, LCG pump.
Command module pilot, Al Worden. Yes. He's still up in orbit.
Cold as required. CB16ECS, cabin repress closed. Verify. Verified. Suit fan Delta P open. Open. Suit fan 2 open. Open. Okay, verify ECS caution and H2O set complement lights on. About a minute.
We wanted to, while they're checking this out, we wanted to be sure and report to you on Al Worden's activities. He has been very, very active, and with his large panoramic camera, there was some concern on whether that would be working properly once he got up into the 100-kilometer orbit. It is indeed working well. We've received reports here on Earth, and the remote sensors also are working very well. There was some problem in retracting one of the booms. I understand those booms, which extend out, a number of meters, are supposed to be retracted any time there is a rocket burn of the main rocket engine. There's enough inertia there to bend them. But Worden is, they're excited about the data coming back from the command module as Worden goes about his very busy activity as he remains in lunar orbit. Let's see. Okay, let's see what Scott's doing there. Did you hear, Fred, where they are on the checklist there now?
They're right at finishing up final systems prep. And the next thing they'll do is connect up the emergency oxygen supply of the OPS. Next is helmet and glove donning, but it almost sounds like they already have their helmets on, the way they're echoing their, the way their voices sound.
That whirring sound is, to my knowledge, has always been a fan in the spacecraft.
A glycol pump, more likely.
Uh-huh. And the communication is just a little bit rocky there. So, David Scott and Jim Irwin are running just about an hour behind their normal timeline in going outside the limb, maybe just a bit more than that. And then they will take the rover and drive down on a 6.5 to 7 hour excursion of the Apennine Front. And we'll be reporting more for you in about 45 minutes from now.
You're listening to the Voice of America's coverage of the flight of Apollo 15. Now 141 hours, 55 minutes into the mission. Commander Scott and Lunar Module Pilot Irwin have been delayed in starting their second EVA, in which they will drive the lunar rover to the foot of the Apennine Mountains. Today's walk and ride on the moon will be at least 30 minutes shorter than planned because of more rapid oxygen use yesterday than planned. The Voice of America will return to the air with its special coverage in 45 minutes at 12 hours 15 for a further report. This is Les Higbee at the Apollo News Center. This program has come to you from the United States of America.